Retro Nation, your boy is back in his groove thing. And we got to start off with the biggest story in the world of LSU sports, LSU women's basketball. The big game that we were looking for on Thursday night has been postponed to Friday early evening. Obviously, we are living, as Larry points out, in unprecedented times. Obviously, the craziest week just went down, and we have had all kinds of crazy weather. It is snowing in the South. The Big Ten is winning national championships. California, unfortunately, is still under siege with this fire, and we've just got ice storms. So, obviously, with the weather, everybody, I understand, is battling something. Obviously, I've had my own personal strife recently. Just know that I have your back. We all have each other's back here in this PHL community. In particular, our growing California fan base. We have quite a few viewers in LA. But to me, the big story, obviously, will Kim Mulkey change some things up with the extra day? Probably not. This isn't, you know, anything too crazy. But it does change what we were going to do for Thursday night. And I'm still deciding we're going to do a big postgame show, obviously, with LSU and South Carolina. Can Kim Mulkey finally defeat the great Dawn Staley? But I want to talk about Brian Kelly. Did he overachieve in 2024 with what we had? I don't think overachieve is the right word. But I wanted to actually lead a broadcast with the stat that we talked about on PFF. We talked about it some last night as well. We had the lowest amount of PFF elite players. And to me, an elite PFF graded player is if you had a season grade of 75 or higher, if you play 200 or more snaps. And we had the fewest in the PFF era of 75 and under graded players. And we were in the bottom three in the entire SEC. Now, the funny thing about that is when you take a look at some more advanced metrics, take someone like Bill Connolly of SB Nation, his metrics actually had LSU as the 15th best team in all of college football, which is about where they should be, right? They finished 9-4 with the dominant bowl victory and victories over two teams that barely missed out on the college football playoff in South Carolina and Ole Miss. So look, I think when you take a look at the PFF grades, you take a look at post-game win expectancy. We were very lucky in many ways. But, you know, I hammered this to a T. And this, in fact, got me under some heat from some people at LSU, some people that know the actual players on this team. And I've just said it all year. It wasn't any disrespect to anybody on LSU football. But the standard has not been met. And it's just that simple. It's just that simple. Brian Kelly's got to do better. Our entire coaching staff's got to do better. But one thing we needed to do was get better players. And that is something we definitely did during this offseason. Now, look, there is so much hype coming into this next cycle. One thing I do want to point out that I feel is of importance, all right? The single most important true freshman, maybe of the past couple of seasons, was no doubt Will Campbell, right? I don't think anyone would disagree that Will Campbell has been by far the single most important player of the last three seasons. Now, I'm talking about players that has played every season of the Brian Kelly era. Now, there have been better players, but Will Campbell has been the single most important player. Can they get the same thing here out of DJ Pickett? All right, and we'll talk about DJ here in just a second, okay? Lance, what's good, PHL Nation? Christopher, my guy Jared A. Gaming Heavy was the first in the chat tonight on a glorious Thursday night, 6 p.m. Central live stream, okay? Now, why do I want to talk about DJ Pickett? Well, it's simple. I watched Ohio State win the national championship. Was Ohio State the best team in college football this season? Yes. Yes. Now, before the playoff began, this was my take. The two best teams in the field were Ohio State and Oregon. I still feel they were the two best teams we had in college football. We had one regular season undefeated team, which is extremely hard to do, as many of you know. And Ohio State lost two games. All right. But both of them were close. Just by eye test, you could just see that those were the two best teams. And obviously in the SEC this year, it was a weird year. Probably the craziest SEC season since that famous 2007 season. But going back to what Bill Connelly said a minute ago, the number two team behind Ohio State per his postseason SP Plus win expectancy numbers, Ole Miss. All right. So I feel we were very lucky to beat Ole Miss. But I wanted to point out, and I actually got sidetracked with my DJ Pickett point, that we beat Ole Miss. Now, were we very lucky to beat Ole Miss? Yes. Yes. But we still got it done. We still hung tough, despite their defensive line up the middle crumbling our interior offensive line. We had guys like Mason Taylor, Garrett Nussmeier, Aaron Anderson step up for us to win that game. And then we had some valiant defensive efforts led by Zay Alexander. But we beat the number two team per Bill Connelly's metrics. Now, we had a lot going in our favor. Obviously, the good luck. Ole Miss had some very unlucky injuries that happened in that game. They were going on seven consecutive games. We had a bye week before playing them, so we had the ultimate rest advantage, and they were on the back end of a back-to-back road game. All those different things, right? But we still beat the number two team in the country per Bill Connelly's metrics. That stands for something. Okay, it stands for something. Now, I want to talk about Pickett because, to me, where we saw real needle movement this year in college football is with the nationally top 10 ranked players. Those guys move the needle. They just do. And I'm not talking about five stars. I'm talking about top 10 consensus national five stars. So we're talking about the top third of the top 30, right? Because roughly every year, there's 30 to 35-ish five-star recruits. DJ Pickett falls in that category. He is a top 10 national five-star. Now, why does that matter? Well, I went through and took a look at Ohio State's roster. All right. If we were to look at top 20 national five-star recruits, there have been 80 in the last four recruiting class, right? Four times 20 is 80. Ohio State had eight of them. Eight. And in essence, they had nine, but Quinn Ewers transferred out. Ohio State had eight of the 80. 10% of all top 20 national recruits. You know what else they had? Of the 40 top 10 national players, they had five. 12.5% of top 10 national recruits. Now, there is a difference because DJ Pickett is younger. A lot of these guys were older, right? Jack Sawyer was one of these guys. JT Tulamalamalala. Caleb Downs was a year two player. He's in this category. Travion Henderson was a 19th overall ranked recruit. Those guys are real needle movers, guys. They just are. All right. And I am perfectly fine that we did not hit DeCorian Moore. I'm perfectly fine that we did not hit Bryce Underwood because, well, it cost a price and we just lost out on that. What I would tell you, though, is DJ Pickett does fit in that category. And he fits in a category where there is also a need, right? There's a little bit of a difference between, let's say, somebody like Jeremiah Smith. And by the way, I meant to include this as well. DJ Pickett was the number 12 on three consensus five-star. So he's barely outside of this. I will say the reason why I'm including him in this top 10 is that there's three quarterbacks in the top 10 national. So if there's multiple quarterbacks, obviously two top 10 national recruits aren't going to go to the same school. So of the non-quarterbacks, he is there. All right. I should have included that. But, you know, this guy should be a needle-moving player. These recruiting services have gotten better, okay, at picking out who the best players are. So what we've learned is you need those guys. You need some of those guys. And hopefully DJ Pickett could turn into one of those guys. Now, are there any other lessons that we can learn from Ohio State's national championship run? Yeah, they had a lot of guys that were NFL-level players that for some reason decided to come back. Whether it was NIL, whether it was them going to the college football playoff. But you take a look at all of LSU's national championship teams. What do they all have in common? Well, they have a lot of really, really, really good year four guys. My guys that weren't quite good enough to go to the NFL, or guys that selfishly decided, hey, I'm coming back for year four. All right, obviously the most famous example of this was Glenn Dorsey. Would have been a top 20 pick, decided to come back, still ended up being a top 5 pick, and won a natty. All right, 2019 LSU. Take a look at the 2016 class. You had your 5 stars. You had 2 5 stars in that class. They both decided to come back for year four. Christian Fulton and, of course, Rashard Lawrence. So we don't have any of those guys really coming back for year four, or do we? Harold Perkins is coming back for year four. We never would have thunk that a year four guy would be coming back. Also, not only is he coming back, he fits in that top 10 national category. Okay? So as excited as we are about DJ Pickett, and he would be feeling a bigger need for us if he could be a starting corner, Ohio State had not one but 2 edge rushers in that top 10 national category that were phenomenal for them that came back for year four. That's going to be the same with Harold Perkins, even though he's not a defensive end like Sawyer or JT. Okay? So, Ohio State, did they buy a national championship? Yeah. And were they at the forefront of a lot of NIL stuff? You better believe it. But we got our own crop of those top 20 to top 10 national 5-star players on our team. And we got a few on our defense. And if they play well, we're going to win some games next year. And I'm really excited about that. Okay? Let's do a check-in. Don't forget Uncle Phil, Larry. Yeah, Joey B came back. It's a little bit different, though, because, you know, if Joe Burrow had come out, he would have been drafted in the 4th or 5th round. So there you go. Now, I want to get into a few more things. I don't think we'll go the full hour. I have to do Blake Show at 7:30, and I've got a lot of other stuff I have to get ready for, obviously, for the LSU women's game on Friday. But I am working on a deeper dive into the LSU offense. And we talked about this briefly last night as well. One thing I think LSU did a little too much of is formationally being a little too balanced, right? I am just not the biggest fan of putting, and this is just the very simplest way of describing this, 2 pass catchers on one side of the formation and 2 pass catchers on the other, right? I like overloading one side, all right? It just seemed anecdotally that LSU had more success with those types of plays when they would put trips to one side. Even if it was trips into the boundary, it would be a more profitable result. Okay. So I'm in the middle of doing a deep dive, taking a look at some of the other college football offenses and how they were able to generate explosives and why we really struggled to generate explosives. Now, one thing I would tell you is a big reason why we did not do a good job of getting the football down the field in big chunks is the quarterback, right? Garrett Nussmeier was not a great deep ball thrower overall. Now, over the middle, he's as good as you'll ever see. Intermediate, as good as you'll ever see. These second-ish level throws is really good. But we need to get better at hitting our deep shots when they are available. But just in general, you watch these other teams. They scheme things wide open. And look, Joe Sloan, tireless recruiter, did everything he could to land Bryce Underwood, so on and so on and so on. But in the end, you need to find ways for at least a few plays during the game to get guys wide open for these gimme type of plays. It's a big reason why Texas was able to stay in that game with Ohio State. All right. Let's see. Ohio State boosters are going to invest more money into NIL now that they won their natty. Next year, the team's going to be worth $30 million. Blanche says LSU is a women's basketball school. I'm fine with that. Might be a baseball school. Let's take a look at the poll question. Which team has a better shot of winning the Natty this season? A lot of you are going with the undefeated LSU women's basketball team instead of Monster Milam and the LSU baseball team. Let's go, guys. Let's see. Sam's in here. Let's go. So yeah, I think for me, Joe Sloan is going to be under the most pressure of any coach going into next season. And hopefully he turns out to be pretty good for us next season. I think Blake Baker's defense next year is going to be good. I think our secondary guys that we brought in are going to be good enough. And I think one thing that really hurt Blake Baker's defense last year was we had guys playing that were unplayable. They were playing, they were struggling so hard that it felt as if we were playing 10 on 11. Okay. So now that we have adults that we know can play. We don't know a gazillion percent for certain they could play in the SEC, but we've seen them have success at the P4 level. Let's see what they can do. Let's see what they can do. But I think they're going to be good enough for our defense to be respectful. All right. Jared said if the baseball team starts 20-0, we might change our minds. Coming up after this quick break, I wanted to get your guys' thoughts. All right. As many of you know, the one thing I actually spend the most time on during the offseason, it's kind of a thing on Power Hour SEC, is SEC over under win totals. All right. We're going to go through the Southeastern Conference, and I want you to give me your best bet early on in 2025. Let's go.
All right, you'll see it right here.
Book your 360 spin booth experience today with Zion Imaging. Yes, that's my buddy Jaron Thomas, who started this venture years ago. And look at the smiles on these faces. This state-of-the-art photo booth is so incredible. I work in the wedding and event industry, and anytime I see a 360 photo booth, it takes your event, whether it's a reunion, a wedding, a conference, no matter what it is, it takes it to another level. Give them a follow on Facebook. Book them today. There is a special deal going on now where you can get up to 40% off. This is all the info. Give them a call today, 318-469-4265, or go to Zion Imaging. That's xyanimaging.com. Home is where the heart is, and our friends at NOPOD Roofing really takes that to heart. 504-810-8744. Give them a call today for all of your roofing needs. And one of my favorite things about NOPOD Roofing is their versatility. They not only do roofing, they do siding, they do painting, they do tree removal, fencing, anything home improvement. Our friends at NOPOD will get you straight. Give them a call today at 504-810-8744 and let them know PHL and Carter the Power sent you. We never overpromise and always overdeliver with NOPOD, baby. Let's go. Is there any update on Colin Hurley? I don't have one. I'm just, you know, based on the information that we publicly have, I'm just glad he's alive. That some of you probably saw the photos of him. Man, I always say this, and I try my best to remember this, but there honestly are very few ways we can die. Like, outside of, like, a health issue, there are very few ways we can die as people. One of those is automobile accidents, okay? And there are a lot of them. How do we know there's a lot of them? Well, if you live in a decent populated metropolitan area, what is every billboard? An injury attorney, okay? Be careful on those roads, especially if they're icy. Now, you take a look at this juncture. LSU, who plays both Ole Miss, Alabama, A&M, Oklahoma, Florida, and South Carolina. These are their win totals. Okay. So, lucky enough, LSU does not have to play Georgia. They do not have to play Texas next year. They also do not have to play Tennessee. But part of the benefit of this past season was LSU playing an easier schedule, I feel, than other SEC teams. You know, my preseason power rankings when it comes to schedule strength, LSU to me had the third easiest schedule. Now, I don't think it finished that way, but I think going into next year, it's just going to be way harder because of all the quarterbacks that are coming back for the schools that you'll play. Right? Now, Ole Miss and Alabama's got to replace quarterbacks, but A&M's getting Marcel Reed back. Obviously, Florida's returning DJ Langway. South Carolina is returning Lenore Sellers. And not only are they quarterbacks, they can run, which has obviously been an issue. So, we'll see what happens. But this is just the top half of over-under win totals. My guy Chris Marler made this, really talented guy. And you know, if there was a lean for me, I would probably lean Georgia to the under with some ambiguity at the quarterback position right now. Other than that, there's really not anyone here that jumps out at me. Florida, I'm leaning slightly to the over. In Auburn at 5.5, I normally like to bet overs on 5.5 teams because that sixth win is just so big and teams will play hard to get that sixth win. But, man, I guess I'll lean Auburn to the over here. But it's very early. Let me know if there is anyone that stands out to you. Now, by the way, I wasn't capping on injury attorneys a minute ago. I was just pointing out that there's a reason that a lot of them are in business because accidents happen. Be safe on those roads. Jared says, over on Auburn, South Carolina, Florida, and LSU. Here's something about these over-unders you need to be careful with. And one thing that's helped me get quite a few of these correct is there could only be so many overs because so many of these teams play each other. Now, the reason why they don't even themselves out is because, you know, we play different non-conference schedules, right? But there you go. I do want to correct a mistake I made at the beginning of the live stream yesterday, and it was an honest one. So one of my favorite college football betting analysts, his name is Brad Powers, and he tweeted out that LSU was a 2.5-point favorite over Clemson. Now, Brad Powers could very well be the most respected college football betting analyst on the planet. But he made a mistake. He tweeted out that LSU was 2.5-point favorites. Clemson are 2.5-point favorites over LSU. Okay? So he issued, you know, he corrected it later, but he never corrected it in the initial tweet. And that's why I said LSU was 2.5-point favorites. But they are actually underdogs versus Clemson. Just wanted to point that out. Okay? So sorry for the error. Okay? Now, here's what we're going to do. In the next 5 to 10 minutes, we're going to answer as many questions as we possibly can. If you super chat, we'll keep this party moving. Obviously, when season starts, we'll talk a little bit more LSU baseball. And obviously, I'm really pumped up for LSU versus South Carolina. I think LSU is going to win. Why not? Let's pull off this upset. I'm also predicting there's going to be some type of extracurriculars. Okay. Let's go to Corey. Welcome to the channel, Corey. Corey, definitely one of our youngest commenters. Look at the profile photo. I'm kidding. How would I feel with another loss to kick off the season? All right, so this rant obviously angers a lot of people when I bring this up. All right. Every year in college football, there are, as many of you know, previous to this season, there were 14 SEC teams. But now there are 16 SEC teams. And what happens is the allure of the college football opening season, where we do have a bunch of sexy matchups, overshadows that most of the SEC do not play difficult season opening games. And they definitely do not play them every single year. I would love a study to be done on if a difficult season opening game actually hurts more than it helps. Now, I understand that a difficult week one game, it's also difficult for the other team for the many reasons it is indeed difficult. All right. But I think it's a massive disadvantage that you play a difficult season opening game every single year. I do. And the reason is because every single coach, especially in the transfer portal era, doesn't know diddly squat about their team. They don't. You don't know anything about your roster. You don't know who your best players are. And the funny thing about that is LSU has gotten the quarterback right quite a bit. Normally, teams that play difficult season opening games or teams that struggle early and turn out to be good, it simply comes down to them not playing the right quarterback. LSU's had the right quarterback. It's just there are quite a few other positions they do not get right in season openers. They just don't. So you have that. You also have no warm-up games. You have no scrimmages. There's no way you can practice or replicate any type of game, right? So it's not the fact that LSU has lost season openers. It's that we normally just don't play all that well. Now, versus USC, we played, I guess you could say, fine. I wouldn't say we played bad. And I guess you could say versus Florida State, we had a really good first half. We didn't play bad in 2023. But in 2022, 2021, and 2020, we never played well. Could it just be small sample size? Yeah, it's just five games. Because in the past, we have had good season opening games versus Power Four teams, such as Oregon in 2011. But even going back to when we played North Carolina week one in yesteryear, North Carolina had half their team suspended. We still barely beat them. They weren't even that good of a team. Okay? It's really hard to win season openers because you don't know anything. Oh, Leslie says we're winning both of them. There you go, Leslie. Welcome. Yeah, I don't think it's just Verge. I think everyone, pitches in on the schedule. You also get a nice check, a sexy check to play the season opener. But it's hard. It's really, really, really hard to win these season opening games. Like, you're just going in blind. Now you have a good idea of who your players are, who your best players are going to be for the next season. But oftentimes you're not right. Yeah. Jared says, we need closer openers. Been too far to travel to watch them lose. Well, we scheduled one in New Orleans, and Florida State took care of business on the blocked extra point. Here's another good point by Sam. All right, so let's take the Wisconsin games. Had the game in Lambeau, we play like ass. Had another game versus Wisconsin versus Houston. And for some reason, their coach quit giving the ball to Melvin Gordon. And we were able to come back and win that game. Trayvon Dural, Anthony Jennings, shout out to them. Okay. Now, before we skedaddle here, you tell me your thoughts on the following sentence. New Orleans Saints head coach Joe Brady. What goes through your body when you hear that? Is that even a possibility? As Aaron Glenn, of course, took the New York Jets job. Not really shocked by that. I do think it is something that Aaron Glenn went to New Orleans, went to the facility. I felt like it was going to happen. So I bumped in Aaron Glenn in Vegas, actually for the USC opener. He was just there vacationing before the season. But would you want Joe Brady? Because this is an LSU topic as well, to be the head coach of the Saints. So obviously the Joe Brady timeline's interesting. He was with the Saints. We hired him in 2019. Then, for those that don't remember, he went to the Carolina Panthers less than 12 hours after we won the Natty. Okay. Coaches under Matt Rule, that was a disaster. And then, of course, we get to the Buffalo Bills. It's very interesting. They fire an offense coordinator who many thought was good, Ken Dorsey, Miami Hurricanes national champion. And Joe Brady has been their OC, and he's been really good. Now, I know a lot of that is Josh Allen, but he's still really good. One interesting thing about Joe Brady is if you look at him when he's actually calling plays, you will see a familiar face in the booth with him, and that's DJ Mangus. How many of you have seen DJ Mangus in the booth calling plays with him? Remember, DJ Mangus was somewhat of a co-OC with Jake Peets in the final Orgeron year. All right. So would you be open to Joe Brady? Jan says, sure. He was a water boy there before blowing up at LSU. Here's a problem with hiring Joe Brady is there are quite a few people that want to just start new. No more Sean Payton guys. And, you know, in essence, Joe Brady is a Sean Payton guy. I'd be fine with it. Obviously, I'm a Joe Brady homer, but sure. Let's roll with it. Joe Brady, New Orleans Saints head coach. But who else would be out there? Would you take Joe Brady over Mike McCarthy? Trying to see. Why do you hate his face, Chance? I think Mike McCarthy's face is fine. One more question before I before we go. Who would you take number one overall NFL draft? Who are you taking? Okay. If you're the Tennessee Titans, do you select Travis Hunter? Do you select Cam Ward? Do you select Shedeur Sanders? Kind of talking myself into the Cam Ward hype. Cam Ward, Travis Hunter out of those three. Jared says he's not impressed with this draft class, outside of Will Campbell, of course, in the first round. All right, y'all. I'm still deciding what we're going to do tomorrow night, if we're going to do a stream or just wait till Friday to do an LSU versus USC recap. So just, you know, stay tuned for tomorrow. We're back, baby. Special thanks to our friends at Zion Imaging. Book your 360 spin booth today. XYANimaging.com. LS! Pow. Ow. LSU. Boom! Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so we started off talking about that. We were going to do a post game at the end of the game tomorrow. So we might just wait and do it Friday and just not stream at all tomorrow. Okay. So we talked about that at the beginning. And tonight we are doing some Cajun chicken. Let's go. Let's go.